Hi. Hello.
It's ridiculous.
Hello, I'm Danielle Tarman, and welcome to Acting Conversations on Craft, a podcast where I am lucky enough to get to sit down with industry experts and talk about all things acting. Enjoy. When I think of curators of film festivals, I often think of them the same way I used to think of casting directors, as the gatekeepers to our success. But during my conversation with Angie Ray-Sutures from the Femme Frontera Showcase and Mary Dossinger from the River Run International Film Festival, it became very apparent that the curators, just like the casting directors, are rooting for us and our films. When I asked Angie and Mary what they were or weren't looking for, the question caused them to hesitate. Both said they didn't want to limit what might be submitted. And what is really exciting for both of them is when filmmakers take a paint-by-numbers storyline, as they call it, and then play with the form. As Angie says, we like to see our filmmakers take risks and push themselves, but the story has to be the strongest component. Mary adds that she is always looking for films that blow your mind and make you question the art form in general. And they both recognize how difficult this is to do and do well. But the takeaway for me was that it gives us permission to play. That again, we need to create without thinking, what do they want? And create with the mindset, what story do I want to tell? I hope you enjoy my conversation with Angie and Mary as much as I did. Today, I am very, very excited because I have Angie Ray-Sutures from the Femme Frontera Film Festival, and I have Mary Dossinger from the River Run Film Festival. So Femme Frontera, that is a Latinx-led film organization, and it was started by you, Angie, if I'm not mistaken, and a couple, I think there were five or six other women, or...
Yeah, so the way that it started is I had just completed a short film and I wanted to premiere it, and I thought it'd be weird to just premiere a short 15-minute film on its own. So I called a bunch of friends, and they had all recently completed films as well, and we screened what we thought was just going to be a one-off, one-time little film showcase. That's why it's called showcase and not even festival. And so that became an official film festival that has now been on for 7 seasons. And I founded it, but my colleagues have been very instrumental in contributing to what the organization is now.
Mm-hmm. We also have Mary Dossinger from the River Run Film Festival, and the film festival has been going on, you're in your 25th year.
Yep, correct. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, and this will be my 16th mm-hmm. festival, so I've been here a while and gotten to see it change in so many different ways, which is really fun. So we show a little bit of everything, so... which is fun from a programming standpoint and also very difficult from a programming standpoint, is that right. We don't have any one particular thing we're looking for. We have 5, 6, 7 different short sections that we program for, and then features as well as special presentations and archival films and all sorts of things. So it's great to be able to branch out and watch lots of different kinds of films, but also makes for interesting programming tactics but it's a lot of fun, and I get to watch a lot of different things. Even in one day, I'll watch, you know, everything from cute animated cartoons to intense documentary features, and so it's both fun and difficult in that regard.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. That's what's so interesting to me, because looking at your website and, you know, being somewhat familiar with the River Run Festival, there isn't a very narrow focus. And so it's up for grabs as to who can submit and, you know, what films we're going to see. So, well, I want to thank both of you very much for coming today and giving me an hour of your time. And I guess we'll just get started. And I am going to start with that question, Mary, and this is for both of you, but what are some of the main criteria that you do look for when you're selecting the films to showcase or to put in the festival?
Yeah, I mean, as we talked about a little bit before we started recording, that is a incredibly difficult question to answer. One I've been asked all 16 years of working here, and one that I've never fully been able to answer. I mean, we have set criteria that is all on the Film Freeway page that explains, you know, those very technical elements of what section you can apply for, when the film was made, all of those kind of things. So we do have set criteria, but from a point of looking at 1700 films to choose for, you know, about 150 spots, all of a sudden that criteria changes a lot. And so a lot of what is happening is you're basing the films on the other films that are submitted that year. So that's why it's not a specific question you can answer. We have really tried, especially with shorts, to, we used to, you know, really go out and look at other things at other festivals, but now we really just look at the things that are submitted to us. But yeah, so then it's just watching all, you know, 200 plus doc shorts and looking at what you have, what the themes you have, what the subjects you have, and basing it on that, and then making a decision as to what works. And we don't do thematic programming, but, you know, just you can't show one subject five times, you know, that kind of thing. So a lot of it is really just doing the hard work of watching every single thing, looking at what you have and basing it on that. And we do have different sections. You know, we have our North Carolina shorts section. So if something works programmatically for North Carolina shorts, then that's great. We have our late night shorts section, which is the quirkier, you know, sometimes horror, things like that. We have our Saturday morning cartoons section. So with animation, things that are better for younger kids. We also have a films with clash section, which is where we show films to local area students during the festival. So we do have some thematic things that we can look for. But, you know, mostly it's just watching everything, then ranking things and looking at them programmatically as to what fits for that particular year. So that's why it's not a specific answer. But yeah.
And I would imagine, obviously, that the quality of the film is something that, you know, I mean, I know that sounds like a no-brainer, but I would imagine you both of you probably get films that you're sort of, this doesn't look quite finished.
Yeah, that definitely surprises me, honestly, that things that get sent in that look like they were made on someone's phone about 5 minutes ago and then submitted in. But the quality has really gotten higher and higher, which makes our jobs harder, honestly.
And I know, Angie, for you, you've got a much more specific focus. So what, I mean, what are some of the things that you are looking for specifically?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to talk about this. This is really cool to get to participate in this podcast. I wanted to just say that, you know, for us, we are simultaneously a film festival and an activist organization. And so for us, it's all about curating according to our mission. And so our mission specifically amplifies films made by people of color living in border regions around the world. But we prioritize films made along the U.S.-Mexico border, most especially along our U.S.-Mexico border, which is El Paso, Las Cruces, and Juarez specifically. And so what we're looking for are films that challenge current perspectives about people from border regions in general. There's no shortage of demonization of immigrants, border communities, the LGBTQ community, women's roles, gender roles, you know, so all of those things are typically subjects that many film festivals we have found in the, it's getting better for sure, but I feel like there's been sort of a traditional either misrepresentation or lack of representation of these voices in, you know, film festivals and in the media at large. And so what we're trying to do is not only curate a program around films that speak to those issues every year, but we also actively work as an organization to support those films to get made. And so, you know, that includes, we provide funding, we provide mentorship, education initiatives, just the whole gamut so that we can try to guarantee that every year we're going to have films that are specifically from this region being super celebrated in every one of our festivals. To us, that's the priority. And so when we curate, you know, at first we tried to come up with a theme each year, and we found that that was really limiting. You know, we also decided to kind of allow the films to let us know what was on people's minds that year. And as right. we see more of a theme of the films that we're receiving, then we realize, okay, that's a definite theme for the year. And then we start curating and kind of bringing in films that have a similar narrative thread, if you will, but not so much so that, you know, as you said earlier, that, you know, every film's going to be programmed the same, right? You're going to have like five films that are the same. So we always like to have a pretty good mix, especially tonally and like mood wise. Our film festival in the past has tended to be severely heavy. We've had to kind of be mm-hmm. like, okay, it's a mood, but we need to like play with different moods and tones and not, you know, bog right. people down and make them feel hopeless at the end of the festival.
Have all of your audience members just boohooing every time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's always like everyone should leave with hope after every festival. Like, not, this world is a cruel, yeah. horrible place. So, yeah, that's traditionally how we've curated.
Do you? So right now, it's if I remember correctly, it's about a 20-minute length is what you're looking at when you're. Is that, did I read that correctly on your website?
Yeah. So, I mean, the only absolute rules that we have are that requirements are that you need to not have a film that's longer than 20 minutes, and you have to identify as a director and as a woman or non-binary person. Really, 10 to 15 minute is the best submission ever. Going over 15 minutes, it starts to get iffy because, again, we only have an hour and a half. And so we're going to try to include as many films in that program as possible to give as many voices a chance as possible. So if your film is 20 minutes, that's already taking up quite a bit. And so we really tell people, like, if you have to absolutely make it 20, we understand, but 15 is still the best.
Mm-hmm. And what about for River Run? What's
so I definitely agree with the idea that I know. Well, this was one of the questions, but shorter is always better. In that, if it is shorter and we like it, we can try and fit it in somehow within that time frame. But if it's 30 minutes and it's still good, that means it has to be as good as potentially 2 to 3 other shorts. And so it just starts to get a little bit of, you know, puzzle work of just trying to fit in the things that you can fit in as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So,
and you, because the River Run Festival, that goes over
10 days.
Almost, is it? It's yep, over 10 days, right?
Yeah. And again, we show somewhere around 170 films. And, you know, we mm-hmm. have our shorts programs, but again, you know, we can't get much bigger than we are because we only have the amount of theaters we have and staff and right. all of that, you know. So even if we get a bunch more submissions in a year, we still can only show a certain number of programs and films, but makes it harder when you right. get more great films.
Right. Well, and I think the you know, with both of you have said that the quality of the filmmaking has gotten better. And I do think because technology is much more readily available, it's a good thing, but that I can imagine that makes your job a little bit harder because, you know, if it's not good, then you can say, okay,
right.
you're not, you know, you're not going to, we can't accept yours. So do you have, and this kind of, do you have specific markers for quality? I mean, I'm again, that's, it's kind of a, you know, I'm imagining that I know the answer to that, but are there, you know, are there things in particular that you're looking for quality wise?
I mean, there's the usual things. We have a screening form that all of our screening committee uses. So, you know, things like the acting, the sound, the subject matter, you know, the overall camera work. We have all of those very specific technical things mm-hmm. that they are asked to look for, which I think is a pretty basic thing that most people would be looking for. Now, again, that's still fairly subjective, however. You know, different people like different looks of things, but when the sound is really bad or this happens, or obviously that is not something that can be fixed. So there are those technical elements we look for sure. And then outside of that, it again goes to subject matter and what, you know, making sure you're trying to represent the most wide ranging group of, for us anyways, and as you said before, the most wide ranging group of stories that you can show. So, you know, you look at the whole picture of what you have and then say, okay, well, all of these are high level technical works. So now where do we go from there? And what stories do we really want to tell our specific audiences? And, you know, what do we want to highlight and what are the most important things for us to bring to our audiences? And so again, not a specific answer, but that is sort of what we look for. But we do start with all those technical, break down those technical elements and rate it from that perspective and then kind of see what shakes out of that and then make our decisions. So.
Well, and I, you know, as you were talking, I thought, well, what about that filmmaker who is making a choice not to put the camera, you know, to not have that steady cam? And that is a very specific choice. So, you know, I mean, did the filmmakers get a chance to, when they submit, do they get a chance to explain, here is what I've done, here is why I've done it, so that you're not watching a movie and thinking, why is the camera shaking? Could they not, you know? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, there is like, definitely on Film Freeway, which is what we use. There is a place for them to write a whole cover letter and all of the explanation as to what they're doing. So yeah, there is definitely that element. And then, yeah, it's just a personal choice after that as to the programmer mm-hmm. who's watching it and whether or not that's something that appeals to them or doesn't appeal to them. But yeah, they have that ability to 100% explain their film and in any way they want to explain it. And we have access to all of that when they submit it.
And so Angie, I saw that you guys also use, is it Film?
Film Freeway.
Film Freeway. Do you get to pick and choose what the submissions have, you know, for the filmmaker to the information for them to put down, or is it a standard submission form?
Yeah, well, in terms of the technical ways in which a story is developed, I mean, you know, we have a pretty large selection committee that is so generous with their time and they help us determine the lineup for the following year. We go over criteria with them, and all of them are filmmakers themselves from all different parts of the country and from all different ethnicities, because we receive a lot of films from people of color. And so for us, it's super important that we are not missing any sort of cultural references when it comes to a certain way that something is shot. Sometimes it's shot that way for cultural reasons, and maybe we're not familiar with it in the United States. That shouldn't be a barrier for it to get accepted. And so, and then a lot of other times, you know, there are people in communities that don't have access to big cameras and really fancy equipment. So we always tell our selection committee, this is not Hollywood. Like, we are very much about the story being at the center of the narrative. And if the story is incredibly strong, it can be shot on anything. It can be shot anywhere. It can have crappy lighting. It can like, but the story has to be the absolute first thing. We also, you know, tend to champion stories that take a lot of risk and tell us about similar issues that we've seen forever in new and innovative ways, in ways that, you know, that we've never seen before, maybe in more experimental ways. Maybe we like to see our filmmakers take risks and push themselves. But the story has to be the strongest component of that film. And then, you know, technical, definitely. I mean, granted, like we've had films where people sometimes submit where the framing is so off that I received one film where half the person's head was cut off the entire film. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't think that was a choice, a creative choice. And how you like just still submitted a film with half it, I just don't know.
Right.
So yeah, there's definite like, this is not. Now, had a creative choice been made somehow, and at the end, like we see the full face and oh my God, that's brilliant.
Right.
Then okay. But no, there's definitely no rhyme or reason to that one. You know, so, I mean, obviously like we have, you know, and there have been some films too that my God, like the graphics they used, the special effects, like were Hollywood quality and it still informed the story and it was a documentary and it was like, oh my God. But again, just to kind of reemphasize what I said earlier, it's really the story is the absolute key. And if that is super strong, then everything else will fit into place.
Mm-hmm. And I'm laughing because I can imagine that you both have seen some very interesting submissions. So this is, you know, you've already answered this because my question was how, you know, if the length of a film does impact whether or not it gets accepted, and you both have pretty much said yes, based, you know, because of you're looking at the whole picture. Now, as far as genre is concerned, I know that the River Run, you've got those six categories, I think, of different types of film. For Femme Frontera, do you get more documentaries or do you have a mixture of?
Yeah, we have a super strong mix of docs, narratives, and experimental films. There's been quite a rise in experimental films, experimental narrative, experimental doc, like just really cool stuff where people are just creating a lot of hybrid films. And that's super exciting to see. So yeah, we have a pretty good blend.
And so when you say experimental, you know, a hybrid, what could you give us an example of what that would look like? Like what's?
Yeah, I mean, it can look in so many different ways. I think poetic is a big one. You know, people's documentaries. I mean, there was one year, I think it was 2020, where we had two very poetic films, and they were both documentaries, but instead of more of a traditional structure, they were almost personal essays, and they used a lot of imagery that was abstract or maybe not necessarily what you would see or expect in a more traditional documentary to express the feelings that they had about a certain subject, about their cultural upbringing, their childhood. So it was really exciting. And then we had a narrative in 2021 that was also extremely colorful and just took on a different atmosphere for the King Midas story. But it was done in Mexico. And I mean, again, I just go back to the colors because that was the most vivid and what has stayed in my mind. And they brought in non-binary and trans actors, and it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And just a different take, but it wasn't just a remake of a traditional story. It was a reinterpretation of the story itself and how you could apply it to Mexican culture. And it's still be representative of the culture. And so it was absolutely gorgeous. And things like that, I mean, we get so excited about, because mm-hmm. it's just really taking the form and pulling it and stretching it and breaking it and putting it back together. And that is just incredibly exciting.
Yeah, I have to say, that description you just had, that's what we're looking for. That's not helpful to people, but that was like a perfect representation of when you watch as many films as we do, when it makes you feel that way, then you're like, yep, that's mm-hmm. the one. But you can't explain that to people, right? You know, when you watch, I watch right. somewhere between 500 to 700 films a year, probably, for River Run. And when I still remember ones I saw 5, 6, 7 years ago that still make me feel that way, because they're playing with the form and it's something you've never seen before. And a lot that we've been getting are animated documentaries, or, and I'll get them as an animated short and I'll be like, no, that's awesome for documentary. I love that. Like, I love that they mm-hmm. took a documentary, a real story, and did it the way they did it. And I just, that's the kind of stuff you're often looking for, are things that just kind of still blow your mind after many years of doing this and really make you question the art form in general. And so it's, that was a perfect description.
So right, anybody exactly. listening, that's what you're aiming for.
Let me also be really real for a second, right? Like, we know how hard it is to do that though. Yeah. Like, I'm a filmmaker too. Yeah. And I've been writing a feature script for the past 4 years. And I'm also trying to bend the rules and change things. And it's really, really hard. But I think the takeaway, if I could give anyone just a little bit of relief from all this, it's, you know, don't see this as pressure. See this as a way of being more free to experiment, to push, to be weird, to you try things, like use it more as, consider it more of a freeing experience rather than we want you to now reinvent the genre, you know, like that's extremely difficult. But if you remain, and it sounds cliche, but if you remain true to the story that you want to tell and the vision that you have, think really freely and big and just try it. You know, it may not work, but I think that's what we want, is just for people to feel really free in the way that they tell a story, to experiment and to just play.
And it's funny you say the word play, because that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, basically what I'm hearing is we have to give us, and I say we, I'm not a filmmaker as such. I'm an actor. So, you know, but we have to give ourselves permission to play and to just try it and not put these restrictions on ourselves. Are there some things that you see in films that automatically disqualify a film?
Do you want me to go?
I don't care who goes first.
I mean, this is such an easy one for us, because it's like the mission is to dismantle stereotypes of people of color, and like I said, the women and non-binary folks and the LGBTQ community. The worst thing you could possibly do is reinforce a stereotype. Right. And you will be surprised how easy it is to do, even amongst people of color. It's, you know, I've seen a few films where you're like, oh, you're just, you really want to milk this narrative. And you are, it's clear that, okay, maybe you're, you know, a person of color, but you have not had the experience that you're talking about. And you are continuing to perpetuate these really problematic perspectives about this particular culture, this particular issue. And it, you know, it even happens about immigrants within Mexican American filmmakers. Like, none of us hold the key of knowledge if we're not doing the research, if that experience is not ours. We don't automatically hold it because we're a person of color. Like, you have to be so responsible if you're going to tackle a particular issue to make sure that you know everything about that issue. Big, big, big bonus points if you yourself have been in that situation and you can speak to it honestly from your perspective. But if you have not, do not for a second assume that you just know things because you live on the border. Like, you know, you have to be so careful. And we as curators have also been guilty. You know, we've had films submitted from cultures that we know nothing about and have assumed that this is the correct representation and have been called out ourselves and from people in that culture and been like, who've been like, this is not accurate at all. And so every year we too hold an extreme responsibility to be very deliberate about every film that comes into our showcase and to make sure that we're deliberate about who is on our selection committee. And if we have, you know, a full spectrum of people from different cultures on our selection committee, it can't just be one representative of each culture. Like, you have to have multiple, and you have to have multiple people with multiple experiences. So we have, you know, upwards of 12 to 15 people who are reviewing 100 films, because every film gets reviewed again and again and again, different cultures from different people, from, because our entire mission is not to perpetuate stereotypes, but to challenge them. And so we cannot, in good faith, program films that are going to continue to harm people. And so, you know, we're still far from perfect, but every year it's a bigger deliberate attempt to be more mindful of the way that we program.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to something that Angie, you said. When those, because you have such a strong mission, when those films are submitted that you're like, do you go back and explain? Do you give them an explanation as to why? Or do you just say thank you, but no thank you?
Essentially we do say thank you, but no thank you. But we also always let people know that if they want feedback, we're more than happy to provide it. Otherwise, we don't. Okay. It's just we don't have the bandwidth to, you know, let everybody know. But it's a hard process and it's a learning process.
Yeah, I can imagine. Mary,
I mean, our process obviously is a little different in the various kind of things we're looking mm-hmm. for. So I don't know that I could say there's anything specific that would disqualify a film. I mean, outside again of, you know, if they didn't follow the rules of submission, then they, you know, I often have to write to people and say, you submitted under this wrong category. So you cannot, because we have a free category for North Carolina students and we'll have people just randomly submit in that free category. And then I have to,
because it said free.
Yeah, it's like, well, that sounds good. So I, you know, that's obviously a disqualification. And I write to them and I explain what happened and that they can feel free to apply under the correct paying category if they would like to. But mm-hmm. outside of that, you know, it does come down to a lot of what Angie said, is you are trying to make the most conscious choices of the films you're seeing and for your audiences, right? So it's like, there are things that to me would disqualify things because they are just not appropriate. And I don't want to perpetuate any sort of horrible, you know, negative stereotype that's within that film. And so that disqualifies it for me, but it's not disqualified from the festival. Do you know what I mean? That's disqualified for me for getting into the festival. So there's two different ways to look at a kind of disqualification thing. Is just, this does not fit what we are trying to show to our audiences and want to put out into the world,
right?
Versus, you know, actual rules disqualification. So I don't know if that answers that exactly.
Right, so this, no. Well, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, you're disqualified if you try and submit, like you said, to the free
or
section.
Or incorrectly, people, yeah, you really have to have your film has to be made after a certain date. And somehow through Film Freeway, sometimes that can happen. And I'll go and I'll look and I'll say, this movie's 5 years old. So obviously this is not right. going to work for our festival. So there are those technical rules that disqualify right. it. But then in the programming process, there are things that for me are not appropriate and I would not put into our festival and have our audiences watch, if that makes sense, just because I don't believe that that is an appropriate, you know, an appropriate storyline or right. an appropriate, I mean, there's some pretty risque stuff that you get and you have to decide, like, is this something I'm going to have an audience pay for and go see? And oftentimes that answer is no. So there are things just sort of personally, programmatically that I would never show.
So are you, you're not no. the only person though, who is choosing, correct. Selecting the films. So I know Angie was saying, and there's close to 15 people on for the Femme mm-hmm. Frontera. So for River Run, do you have that large of a group?
We have or is that it... large of a screening committee, yep, who helps us watch everything. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to about 3 to 4 programmers that then take all of those reviews from themselves, from our screening committee, and then break it down into the specific programs. You know, we're programming for a very diverse audience, and I think it's important for us to take that into account and not ever make it one person's voice at all.
Right, right. What are some of the things that you would love to see more of coming, you know, to the screen? Either one of you, go.
I guess I'll go. I mean, I think I'm having trouble answering this question because every year I'm literally so blown away by what people send us and share with us. You know, it's we're also a film festival that champions very vulnerable films, very raw, very honest. And I don't think that you can ask more from people. That's like such a big ask. Mm-hmm. And for people to be like, here, like, here's my heart and soul and like deeply vulnerable story. And then here, program it. And then here, like, send it on your tour. And here, I will be there that night and we'll celebrate it together. I mean, that can't be taken for granted. You know, it's deeply personal. And I'm, you know, I mean, maybe some filmmakers look at film festivals like, you know, oh my God, I really hope that I get in and we're at the beck and call of the film festival. But I feel opposite. We're at the beck and call of the filmmaker. Like, without them, we don't exist, you know, and without them being willing to share such beautiful, vulnerable stories, we don't, you know, we don't have a valuable, powerful showcase. Like, so, you know, I'm just crazy grateful. And I hope that we can continue to be a space where people feel comfortable continuing to share their views and their insights and their histories and their stories with us. Because, and I hope that it can be and that we can continue to make it an experience that they find also valuable to them and beneficial to them. So, so I don't know that I necessarily have an answer for what we want more of. I'm just super grateful with what we receive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's yeah.
Yeah. I certainly agree with that as well. I mean, it's one of the hardest things, as we've been talking about, when you keep getting better and better films and you have to say no to films that you love. I mean, that are also incredibly valuable, but it's one of part of the process, but it's one of the hardest parts of the process. So I don't feel a lack of what people are sending us in any way. It's the opposite. And I wish we could show 500 films because I would love to. I mean, I still remember films that I saw that we never programmed because it didn't work in that particular year or whatever happened, or, you know, or even, you know, I saw it outside of the festival and we couldn't show it, that kind of thing. I mean, there's so much incredible talent out there and I'm incredibly blown away by it. And I wish I could highlight so much more of it. So I don't, there's definitely not a lack of things that are being sent to us in any way.
Which I'm glad to hear that, just because, you know, I had anticipated that possibly it was like, I don't want to see another, you know, breakup movie, or I don't want to see another, you know, that kind of thing. But
it's like, yeah, so it's a little bit like we said, when they do that, you know, a super paint by numbers kind of story, and you read about it and you're like, oh, I don't know about that. And then they break the mold mm-hmm. somehow. So you never know. You right. literally never know. When you hit play, you never know what's about to come on your screen. And that, right. you know, over 15 years of doing this, it's kind of amazing that that still shocks me, but it does. I mean, I don't ever read about it before I watch it. I don't really even see where it came from. I just hit play and I start watching it, and then I read about it afterwards. And that's the way I like to do it, because I like to base it completely on what is being shown to me and how I respond to it, and then kind of deep dive into it after that. But so, yeah, you could say that, oh, I don't want to see another political film. Oh, I don't want to see another this or that or this. But then all of a sudden one comes through and you're like, well, actually, this is really great. And we could do this with it. And, you know, so I can never say that any one thing is something I wouldn't want to see again.
Well, that's good. And going back to something that you said, and I meant to ask you this at the time. So when, because you said that there was somebody who had submitted like a animated film, but it was really a documentary, and you were like, "Ooh, that fits." Do you move that to that category? I mean, do you tell the filmmaker and say, "Look, we want to use your film, but we're going to put it in this category"?
I do when I accept it, obviously. So mm-hmm. when I right, accept right, it, right. I say this will be in our documentary shorts program or animated shorts program. Those are generally the two that have been kind of interchangeable, but we have to be a little careful. We're Academy qualifying in both those sections, so I have to make sure that it will kind of fit the rules of that. So like with animation, it has to be a certain percentage of animation. So, you know, if a documentary story just used some animation, it would have to stay in the documentary category. So there are a few little technical rules I have to follow, but otherwise they can be interchangeable, because a documentary short is just, you know, a true story. So it can be told in any particular way, which is really fun. For animation, there's just a little bit more technical elements of the amount of animation being used for it to qualify for an animated section. But yeah, it's always fun. And thus far, all the filmmakers have been perfectly happy to be in one or the other, and say a lot of festivals will kind of switch them from section to section. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I mean, I'm sure they would, you know, I'm sure they would be, because it's like, who would then say, no, don't show my film?
No, but I mean, it just shows you the, you know, the inventiveness that they have, that they want to tell stories in a certain way. And I think it's sometimes been done to incredible effect, that like hits you even harder than it would seeing just sit down interviews with people. All of a sudden you're like thrust into this story that they're telling, and because they're able to show it in a new way, which is really cool. Instead of live recreations, they decided to do animation, which is really cool.
Yeah. So what do you think some of the misconceptions might be about what you both do? And I know, you know, again, we've talked about how very different the two film festivals are, but essentially you're both looking through film after film after film and making a selection. But what might be some things that you want to make sure people know?
I mean, it sounds silly, but like one of the things I like to tell filmmakers a lot is, just because your film doesn't fit in this specific festival doesn't mean it's bad by any stretch of the imagination, or that you shouldn't look for other festivals, because there's so many great genre festivals out there, other different things that are looking for different films. And I think the biggest thing I always like to tell filmmakers is, do your homework on the festival. Don't just randomly submit to places, because you should. And I am always so impressed when I get letters from people who are submitting where they reference films that we've shown, and not that we show the exact same thing all the time, but they've done their homework as to the kind of things we're showing. Mm-hmm. And so I think from a misconception standpoint is that we're just, you know, throwing things away and that means it's bad or whatever. But again, as we've discussed a lot with what we're doing, is it comes down to a curatorial element. So it doesn't mean that the films that don't get in were not good, and so that they should, you know, not submit to other places, I guess is the only thing I can think of.
I mean, I completely agree with everything that you just said. I think research is super important, and especially with our festival, we're pretty specific. So it's like,
right.
If you didn't read the fine print, I mean,
right. Good yeah, luck.
It's just, and I mean, I don't want to waste people's time, I really want people to feel like they feel, that they're coming into a good space that will benefit them. And yeah, I mean, as Mary said earlier too, like if you don't get selected, I mean, ask. Like literally when we are not able to accept a film, as I said before, it's in the letter that you can always request feedback. And the feedback is, I think, rarely going to be like, well, your film was confusing or the story, was bad, or it's very rarely that. Sometimes it's like, well, with our particular festival, this was our theme this year, or these are the films that, had more of a social justice message, or maybe yours did not align with our theme this year or whatever. But I'm always very willing to share that. I'm also willing to share if there were some technical elements that were, not, that didn't work, or, and it's not
like the head, yeah, like we need to see the whole head,
lifting the camera just a few more inches. sometimes it's really simple and sometimes it's really not. And I personally have reached out to filmmakers before, like you were saying earlier, Mary, about films that like you didn't accept but still stay with you even now. There's so many films like that for me too. And usually if I get the chance, I will personally reach out to those filmmakers and say, your film was incredible. I'm so sorry that we weren't able to program it. Please keep trying. Please submit work again next year. I feel like it's important for me to let them know if I can. In fact, one of those people that I reached out to, it's because they had made a 20-minute film. And I was like, your film is incredible. It's literally too long at this point for us to program in this year's festival, but I want to congratulate you for, such a great film. Please continue to submit work. They not only submitted work, they became one of our grant recipients. They became a volunteer with us. It's opened up so many doors just from because they gave it everything and it wasn't a bad film. And then this past year they had a film in the showcase with us that we funded. It's so more complex and there's so many other factors that decide whether or not a film gets in. It's really not as black and white as, well, your film was bad.
Yeah, we've actually even started a whole year-round program over these last few years. I mean, we show something generally about every month or so. I mean, we have partnerships with PBS that we're showing some of those for free, but part of that came from, no, I think this film would be so great with this group in town and let's do that, because you see so many things that just don't fit into that. I mean, even for us, 10 full days, it seems like so much, but
right.
There's so many things, but you see something in it that could work for another aspect you're doing or partnering with a local group or whatever. So, I mean, that's how much things stay with us that we want to keep doing things with. So, yeah.
Right. Well, to both of you, thank you for giving me your time today. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Of course, of course.
That's it for today's episode of Acting Conversations on Craft. If you enjoy these conversations, please feel free to review and rate the podcast on iTunes. You can also leave comments or questions on the Facebook Acting Conversations on Craft group page. Thank you for listening, and until next time.